WCNO. Listener-supported Christian radio for the Palm Beaches and the Treasure Coast.
Welcome to the Religious Liberty Report, a weekly news briefing on religious liberty news, a program hoping to educate, encourage, support, and equip you, our listeners, on important issues of our day, but always approaching the issues from a biblical worldview.
The Religious Liberty Report, a Christian legal ministry advocating for religious liberties, freedom of conscience, on the air working to keep America open to God's truth. The church is called to be the moral, the cultural conscience of the nation. Welcome to the Religious Liberty Report, where we support, yes, religious freedom, but believing that true freedom is different. It's freedom to live as God intended, bearing the image of God, our Creator, restoring God's good creation. Freedom, true freedom, embracing a bigger, fuller version and vision for the human person. Today I pray that the Holy Spirit guide our thoughts as we discuss sensitive geopolitical issues, as we seek answers in our day. Turning to page one on the report. The second week of March, 2026. I am willing to pay the price. My heart is prepared. Reporting from Voice of the Martyrs podcast on the Indian church, the church in India. The Indian Constitution says that there is freedom of religion. But then there's another law, a state law that says you cannot change your religion. It seems like these two are in conflict with each other. So how do the courts not step in and tell the states, hey, you can't have a law that says you can't change your religion because the national constitution says we have freedom of religion? India, willing to pay the price. Things are actually upside down, and the constitution is not a priority. They somehow are finding loopholes. Anti-conversion bills, anti-conversion laws passed to, quote-unquote, protect the freedom of the individual to practice his religion. Interesting. Freedom turned on its head with these anti-conversion bills, making it against the law to seek to convert, alleging that an effort to convert another is violating their freedom of religion. One frontline gospel worker in India said, they don't think they're restricting conversion, they're actually protecting an individual that has a particular faith in a particular God. The way the law is framed, it turns out anybody that is evangelizing can be guilty of violating these anti-conversion laws in the modern state of India. Evangelizing, an illegal act. This brings me to Voice of the Martyrs annual map, listing those hostile areas and restricted nations around the world where Christianity is persecuted, harassed, imprisoned, killed, deprived. Well, they divide it in three categories: restricted nations, hostile nations, and monitored nations. Restricted nations, at the most extreme and severe, would be countries where government sanctions anti-Christian laws that lead to direct harassment of Christians and Christianity, even imprisonment, deprivation of basic liberties because of their witness for Christ. Where it's government policy to prevent Christians from obtaining Bibles, or other Christian literature. This can sound dystopian to Christians in the West. But government policies preventing Christians from obtaining Bibles or other Christian literature is in the books, the law, in these restricted nations. I count 42 nations on the restricted nations list, published by Voice of the Martyrs, from Afghanistan to Bahrain, China, Cuba, Iran, Iraq, Libya, Malaysia, Nicaragua, Saudi Arabia, Syria, and Turkey. A long list, 42 nations listed as being restricted nations where the government actively suppresses Christianity, restricts Bibles, Christian literature, evangelizing. There is also hostile nations, nations or large areas where governments may attempt to provide protection for Christian populations, but routinely there is persecution by family, friends, neighbors, political groups because of their witness, hostile nations, and then monitored nations, areas closely monitored because of a trend toward increased persecution. The frequency and severity of persecution do not currently meet the criteria of hostile, but they're monitored because of trends toward increased persecution. These would include countries such as Colombia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Indonesia, Lebanon, Mexico, Niger, Sri Lanka, Uganda. You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report, reporting on persecution of the faithful in restricted and hostile nations around the world, as reported by Voice of the Martyrs. We turn to page 2 of the report. New meta-analysis analyzed 44 studies involving more than 21,000 participants to examine how over-parenting, excessive control, protection, and intervention in a child's life can relate to mental health. Overparenting, often called helicopter parenting, typically involves solving problems for children, preventing challenges, or intervening excessively in their children's decisions and daily experiences. Psychological frameworks such as the self-determination theory, suggesting that autonomy, competence, and relatedness are core needs for mental health and development. When children are shielded from challenges too frequently, they may have fewer opportunities to build confidence in their ability to handle stress or uncertainty. Reporting on helicopter parents on the Religious Liberty Report, a meta-analysis of 21,000 participants studying the development of the brain in children and the development of resilience by solving problems, navigating manageable stress. When parents consistently intervene too early or too often, the research suggests it may weaken the development of autonomy, an ability strongly tied to the long-term psychological stability of the child. Across all studies, higher levels of overparenting were consistently associated with greater anxiety, depression, and mental health issues in children and young adults. The study alleges to have found an association between overparenting and the mental health problems of their children as they got older. The study suggests that excessive parenting and parental control may become more psychologically disruptive during adolescence and early childhood. Speaking to our children, listening to their feelings, explaining our decisions as parents, even apologizing when we make mistakes. No, this doesn't remove boundaries between parents and children. It just adds humanity. It adds authenticity. Before, kids didn't need explanations, but now we're waking up to the fact that children expect to be respected. They want clarity. They want fairness. Unregenerated, you might hear, "Stop crying. What are you crying about?" Regenerated would sound like, "Tell me, what happened?" Before, you might say, "Because I said so." And now you would say, "Let me explain." Before, you might say, "Don't be mad." Now you might say, I can see that you're upset. Last week, for the fifth year in a row, the Miami-Dade County Public School System has approved the National Day of Prayer. The Miami-Dade County School Board approving the National Day of Prayer for the fifth year in a row. Voting to approve the recognition of the day as a National Day of Prayer in local public schools, encouraging but not mandating prayer-led activities if they're volunteer-led. Often passing by a majority, but this year passing by a unanimous vote. The board unanimously approved the measure to commemorate the National Day of Prayer in the district's public schools. An item that prompted board members to ensure that Florida's motto, "In God We Trust," be displayed in the school boardroom. The Miami-Dade County School Board getting it right for a fifth year in a row, approving the National Day of Prayer. Turning the page to the international news front. Remember, modern-day Iran is ancient Persia, the land of Esther, Daniel, King Cyrus, who God called his anointed one in Isaiah chapter 45. God has been working in the nation of Iran from of old. Members of Congress are requesting an investigation into alleged reports that military leaders are claiming that the war in Iran is part of biblical end times prophecies. House Democrats requesting the U.S. Department of Defense open an investigation into reports that service members have lodged anonymous complaints about commanders in the military invoking religious prophecy, apocalyptic theology, to justify the United States military actions in Iran. The lawmakers, in a public letter, said, quote, "At a time when billions of dollars and untold numbers of lives hang in the balance, while the Trump administration wages a war of choice in Iran, the imperative of maintaining strict separation of church and state and protecting the religious freedom of our troops is especially critical. We must ensure that military operations are guided by facts and the law, not end times prophecy and extreme religious beliefs." Letter by Democratic congressmen and women to the Department of Defense, citing end times prophecy and, quote, "extreme religious beliefs." Turning the page. On the international front, Iran shutting the Strait of Hormuz. I found this. On a normal day, the world produces and uses 103 million barrels of oil. But due to Iran shutting the Strait of Hormuz and striking oil infrastructure, about 10 million barrels are currently offline, unavailable. We're only 13 days into the war, and prices for Brent crude have topped $100. Another observer commented that oil is rising despite a planned release of 400 million barrels of global strategic reserves. The problem is that reserves can only be released at a rate of 3 million barrels per day, while 10 million have been removed from production. That's why only a drop of 10% in supply can cause prices to rise by more than 50%. Demand for oil is what they call inelastic, meaning it's firm, it's tight, it's narrow, it's rigid, unforgiving. People still need to drive to work. Ships must deliver goods and power plants must continue running. And of course, planes must fly. It takes a large increase in oil prices to get people to stop doing these things. So, a small drop in supply, even 10%, can have a big effect on price. For example, in 1973, oil supply dropped by around 3 million barrels per day, but the price of oil quadrupled from $3 to $12 in 1973. The last major oil shock. But today, they say, there's nearly zero spare capacity. While strategic reserve releases will ease the pain in the short term, it's simply not enough, and those limited reserves will only last about 130 days. You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report, talking about oil infrastructure. Offline, unavailable. On the battlefront, some are reporting that Iran seems to be fighting back. Others that the regime is on its last legs. It won't be a matter of if only, but when the regime finally falls. Could it be that the Iranian regime is in its last dying throes? But that doesn't mean that it can't do serious damage before it goes. And I found this. Quote, "This is typically what the endgame of a war looks like. The enemy lashes out with all of its final strength, pulling out every stop, pulling every lever, pushing every button, and then, unless we lose our willpower, they lose." This is how Japan collapsed at the end of World War II. The same happened with the Nazis. The Battle of the Bulge, Hitler's final attempt to stave off defeat. It was bloody, it was terrible, and Hitler lost. All this to say that the losing side very often will launch a last stand, or a final push, or pull out all the stops. That's what we're probably watching now in Iran. But the question of whether Iran's activity represents its final death throes of the regime, or a reconsolidation of a new regime, that's the question. One commentator said that the answer is actually not up to Iran. It's up to the United States and Israel. That the only hope for the Iranian regime right now is that the United States and Israel stop. Somehow they stop in their tracks before the regime falls. That's precisely why they make a final push, a last gasp attempt to prevent what is increasingly inevitable. Iran, a terrorist regime pursuing terrorist tactics. Three lines of terror tactics. One, targeting the American homeland. Yes, ABC News reporting that the FBI has warned police departments about the possibility of Iranian drone attacks on American soil. Two, targeting the Strait of Hormuz and other Gulf oil supply chains. And number three, targeting, terror targeting the allies of the United States. One source calculated 550 strikes by Iran against Israel, 14% of all strikes. But Kuwait has been targeted with 24%, the UAE with 44%. So terror targeting US allies in this second week of the Iran war, what they're calling the second Persian Gulf War. One commentator said that you take the opportunity to hit them when you can. Stop the threat before it fully blooms. He went on to say that that's precisely what President Trump has been doing. This commentator went on to say, okay, we'll see how all of that turns out. But the idea that it's an excursion to prevent a war, well, that's largely right. Because again, in historic terms, what the United States is doing right now is an extraordinarily low-cost opportunity. Low-cost. We're not talking, again, about hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of American troop boots on the ground in Iran. We're not even talking about a months-long war at this point. We are on day 13. If you leave in place a regime that is increasingly powerful and can choke off the waterways whenever it wants, that doesn't make things better, this commentator says. The Wall Street Journal says, quote, leaving in place Iran's theocratic regime, angry, defiant, and possibly in possession of a nuclear stockpile, would essentially grant Tehran control over the world's energy markets. The Wall Street Journal. So what does all this mean? Well, it means that in the end, only the complete collapse or serious damage leading to the collapse of the Iranian government will bring lasting victory. That's what it means. That's why the president is saying that we have to, quote, finish the job. So are we close or are we months away? Some say we're closer than we think. But closer to what? Could we truly be eliminating the threat in the future? So it brings us to the question of what we have to do to actually see an end to this war. Today's headlines, Hegseth vows to reopen Key Strait as U.S. measures fail to calm oil fears. U.S. economy was vulnerable before the war with Iran. Trump removes sanctions on Russia to help oil flow amid Iran conflict. A weakened Iran hits back by strangling a vital waterway for oil supplies. Turning the page, I found this, another point of view. Strait of Hormuz out of order indefinitely, above 20% of the world's oil, and what's less reported, the world's liquefied natural gas, LNG, moves by ship from the Persian Gulf through the Strait of Hormuz. That route is now closed. Not because of mines. The U.S. sank nearly the entire Iranian navy and its mine-laying vessels. The strait, for now, remains clear of mines. Instead, Iran has relied on two other weapons. First, a substantial missile capacity to strike vessels in the strait. Second, swarms of drones. Swarms of drones that are nearly impossible to defend against. Due to their volume, so many of them, and the close proximity to their targets. There's been talk of U.S. Navy escorts. But then the U.S. Navy vessels themselves would be in the face of Iranian drone swarms. And losing a Navy ship, well, We don't want that to happen. The second reason the strait is effectively closed is insurance. No owner of these vessels will risk losing a ship and cargo without insurance coverage. And many insurers have withdrawn what they call war risk insurance. Lloyd's of London is reportedly still, quote, open for business, but only on a case-by-case basis. You see, ports will not accept uninsured vessels. With Iranian attacks already underway, the insurance market will not be returning to normal anytime soon. The Strait of Hormuz is closed indefinitely. You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report, reporting on the Strait of Hormuz. Out of order indefinitely. He continues, Iran's horizontal escalation. Military strategy distinguishes between vertical escalation, where the two sides exchanging progressively more powerful weapons, and horizontal escalation, which means widening the battle space, drawing in new parties, driving wedges between allies. Iran has chosen the latter, horizontal escalation, knowing that it cannot match the U.S. weapons. Instead, it has attacked Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Iraq, justifying the strikes by pointing to the U.S. bases that those countries host. Turkey, also a NATO member, has been targeted. What started as a war involving three countries has now come to involve more than 10. With economic fallout spreading to India, China, Russia, this strategy of Iran, horizontal escalation, creates divisions among affected nations and generates international pressure on the United States and Israel to end the war. A relatively low-cost approach, Iran's horizontal escalation. But the fact is that Iran has one of the fastest-growing Christian churches in the world. Even though believing in Jesus is punishable in Iran, believers in Iran are full of the Holy Spirit. It's being reported that they are most courageous and they're out there. Some of them are dying for Jesus. Christians in Iran, a small but resilient minority. Estimates vary from 200,000 to over 1 million Christians in Iran. And many, particularly those that converted from Islam, operate in secret, facing imprisonment, harassment, severe legal restrictions on worship. Christianity in Iran. As old as Christianity itself. From the first century, missions associated with the apostles, today associated with these underground churches in Iran. A church of deep antiquity, repeated persecution, and Holy Spirit resilience. But Jesus never promised his followers an easy path. In fact, he told his disciples that the world would hate them. Jesus sent them out as sheep among wolves. Jesus' words came true in the lives of his apostles, and they're still coming true today in the lives of his followers around the world. Thank you for joining me on the Religious Liberty Report. Alexander Alfano signing off until next time, exhorting you to contend earnestly for the faith, a faith which was once for all delivered to the saints. God bless you, and God bless America.
Thank you for tuning in to the Religious Liberty Report, a broadcast intended to help equip churches and ministries on how to remain faithful to our mission in a culture that too often disagrees with our message. Tune in next week as we follow up on freedom of conscience, because without freedom of conscience, we have no other liberties. Alexander Alfano reporting for the Religious Liberty Report.